Clayton. Sean Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton, who's with us every day here. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore. He joins us live from Miami on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Hello, John.
Hey, Bob. Did I help the podcast at all?
Did you help the podcast? In what
your
way?
Podcast.
In what?
Your guest today.
Our guest today.
Your MMA person?
Oh, Dana White.
Yes,
Dana White.
Yes.
Oh, did you do that? I thought C-Rod set that up.
No, actually, I went over. Dave Lockett used to be the PR director of the Steelers, and I knew that he had all those people because, I mean, he was standing there, you know, 5 feet away from the fight earlier this week. And so it was like, as soon as I found out that you needed that, I mean, it really took me 5 minutes to get it set up.
Well, I thank you very much for that. And I hadn't brought that out yet, but what John's talking about is our Get in the Cage podcast that I do every week, brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. We'll feature the one, the only Dana White. Had a chance to talk to him for few minutes today, so thank you very much for that, John.
Yeah, that was, so you can blame me on that one, so sorry.
Nothing. He was great. It was good. So, yeah, that'll be a good conversation for people to listen to. But
good.
Hey, we were just going through this. I'm curious. We have a list of the best players to never win a Super Bowl. What's the first player that comes to mind for you?
Would that be Alan Page, Jim Marshall, we got Fran Tarkington, Bruce Smith, Jim Kelly? You go to the teams that I think have been to the four Super Bowls, and I think, you know, they certainly have to be high in the mix.
Yeah, my first name was Barry Sanders. He's one of my all-time favorite players in any sport. Did you get a chance to talk to him much throughout his career?
Oh, yeah, I did. I mean, but I guess the only thing with with Barry is that he had no chance to go to the Super Bowl because he's fighting the curse that was there for 50 years. And so, but the curse is there for 50 years. He had no choice because, you know, you had the Bobby Lane curse, because what ended up happening, and I know this from living in Pittsburgh, and I was only like 5 years old at the time, is that what happened was that, they make the trade, and he was a playoff. I mean, he was in a championship game the year before. They had a young quarterback that they wanted to get out there. So they traded Bobby Lane to Pittsburgh, and he says, "You will never make a championship game in the next 50 years." And he was right. And it's now 60 years.
Wow. Yeah, they need to break that curse.
Barry never had a chance because he had the Bobby Lane curse.
Yeah. Well, John, you said you did something for Bob. What would you do for me? Did you do anything for me?
Well, the thing is, Dave, you know I would do anything for you. You know I'd do anything for Jim. But I got to add, it's like I if you needed something, I mean, I got you Brian Blades, even though you didn't ask. I got that yesterday, but it's like all you have to do is ask. I mean, it's like, okay, so Bob got word to Curtis that he'd like, you know, one of the fighters, and so it's like I go outside, I know where to go, got it set up. I mean, I didn't have an immediate setup because Curtis had to set up a time and all that stuff, but no, it's like you just need to holla.
So all right, Professor.
Just holla.
I will holla at you.
Holla, Dave.
I will holla at you. Yeah, that was a good list you just had. I forgot about the Bills. And Bruce Smith is number one on the quarterback sack. I don't think anybody's ever going to break that record, John.
No, I agree.
200 sacks.
You know, maybe you can look at Von Miller, but you know, in this stage, particularly the way it is in the league, you know, once you get past 8 or 9 years, then all of a sudden that clock starts ticking, and we watched it with Luke Kuechly, Pat Willis, several other players. And so, no, you're right. I mean, I don't know, it's like 208 or something like that. I don't think it is ever going to be topped.
And let me ask you this, John, and this, I don't mean to go off on a tangent here, but why doesn't NFL Films go? I understand that they have like films of every game that was pretty much ever played.
Yeah.
Why don't they go back and calculate the sacks for those guys that were, it was what, 1982 when they started keeping track of them?
Well, because one of the great historians of the game, I think his name is Jim Tunney, he actually did that. I mean, he tried to find as much film as he possibly can. He tried to find as much information that was in the stat sheets and everything else. And so he actually, and he did this probably 20-some years ago, was able to resurrect as many of the sacks that he believed were there. Because, I mean, you know that it cheated. you know, one of the great pass rush stories of all time, you know, the L.A. Rams, because, you know, the L.A. Rams, you know, had the fearsome foursome. And so, you know, when you're talking 82, it went past them because, I mean, they're from the 70s. And so it really didn't accommodate. But again, he was able to, you know, calculate some of the Deacon Jones stats, because again, it's like, you know, you look and you say, okay, through the years, Deacon Jones, even though they didn't pass the ball, you know, more than, they do now, it's like they're, you know, sometimes you have games like the Jimmy Garoppolo game where they only have 8 passes. And so you just had such a discrepancy as far as, you know, numbers and percentage of sacks. But I mean, Deacon Jones, really had so many more sacks than anybody gave him credit for. But, you know, Jim Tunney was able to do that as a historian. And I think those lists are available on Google. And so somebody did it, and I figured, well, once they did it, then they're not going to do it anymore.
Professor, I heard the injury reports came out today, and it sounds like both teams are pretty healthy, including the 49ers with Tevin Coleman.
Yeah, I've never seen, and again, this has been the whole playoffs. I've never seen a playoff where there's been so few injuries keeping players out of games, because the injury report came out today, and, you know, the way it goes is that you go questionable, doubtful, and then out. And so the fact that every player on both teams participated in practice, you know, they ended up having no players to report on the injury list. And that includes Coleman, the running back, Tevin Coleman, who had the dislocated shoulder. So it looks like, I don't think I can remember a Super Bowl like this where every single player is available for the game. And so, and really, again, if I was going to go back and double check the numbers, but I think during the entire playoff season, there was only maybe 5 or 6 starters that missed games.
Do you think that Breida will be the primary backup to Mostert, or do you think it's going to be Coleman?
No, I think it's going to be Breida, because again, I mean, you know, you figure with Tevin coming off the dislocated shoulder, you know, they don't want to test it too much, and so he can be available. Maybe he can be active, but in the end, I think that you know, you have to go with Breida because he's healthier. You know, because again, you put the guy in, it's like, okay, if we really need you with that dislocated shoulder, we'll put you out there. But again, you've got 2 healthy backs, one that gained 220 yards, and another Breida, because of the system that they have, you know, he can have a 100-yard game. So no, I think that you move Coleman into the number 3 slot, and, you know, he may be active, he may not, but again, at least you can make him available.
John, I asked you on Monday which way you were leaning in terms of which team you thought was going to win this game, and I said I wouldn't hold you to it. You had the week to sort of go through who's healthy, who's not, see if your opinion changed. Where are you at now? As we're in the last day of broadcast anyway, before the game, what team are you feeling?
Well, being that the way this broke down, and with the time of the show and also the transportation issues, I did not make it to any of the team interview sessions. So I gained nothing from any of those 3 days of going there. I went Monday night, of course, to the opening night. But so I've gained no new knowledge, and so I'm staying where I stay. Let's see how refined it is. I think that what's going to happen is the 49ers are going to jump to a 10-point lead because they'll come out in I formation, which is their specialty, and that's the Chiefs' weakness. They'll have a script of 15 plays. You know, 13, 12 of them are going to be in I formation with a trick play or two, and then after that they'll take a 10-0 lead, and then the Chiefs will come back, climb back, win the game 34-31.
Wow. We're going to have to make sure we consult that, especially the I formation. You're getting very specific, Professor. Very specific.
Oh, you want more specifics? Okay, so in the I formation, they run it 43% of the time, and out of that, they average 4.9 a carry. The Chiefs against I formation teams face it only 12% of the time, but they gave up 6.4 yards per play. And so there's a discrepancy right there that favors the 49ers and goes against the Chiefs. And so, but what ends up happening, and you saw it in the game against Tennessee, you know, what Steve Spagnuolo will do, he'll, after opening up and trying to go with the 7 guys and all that, then he'll put an 8th guy in there. And if that's not working, then he'll start blitzing. And even though the blitzing does open things up to a few extra pass plays with the blitz, you know, they were able to start to slow things down. And that's why Steve Spagnuolo, who's, you know, been in the Super Bowl, beat the New England Patriots, all that, I think he's the X factor in this game, because I think he's really good. And really, it took him half the season to turn things around on the defense. But in the end, where everybody looks and say, oh, we're looking at one of the worst defenses in Super Bowl history, say what you want. They only gave up 19 points a game, which is pretty good.
Well, yeah, and as you pointed out, John, in the last 5, now not the playoffs, but the last 5 regular season, about 10 yards a game. So, yeah, that's the one thing that makes me think that they can possibly win, because I just really like the Niners. So, hey, John, tomorrow, can you give us any kind of a hint of what you, not who you're voting for, but who you think are going to be the, it's five, right? Five finalists for
that's
Hall
correct,
of Fame?
Yeah.
Yeah. How many do you think there will be, and give us some names?
Okay. So, and again, knowing that I have a great chance to be wrong, because you can never figure out the room till you open up the room and see how it goes for the 7 hours we're going to be in there. But I think that, Troy Polamalu has a great chance to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think that Steve Hutchinson is going to beat out Alan Faneca and Tony Boselli. I think that, Isaac Bruce is going to beat out Reggie Wayne and Torrey Holt. I think that Edgerrin James can slide in there, because I think what will happen is that some of the safeties, because again, we have four safeties that are there, including Leroy Butler, we know John Lynch. I think they'll all take votes away from each other. That could open up the door for Edgerrin James to be able to get in there. And then I think the sleeper in this thing can be Steve Atwater. Now, it can be Steve Atwater or a second offensive lineman, but I think there's some, enough momentum building that maybe Atwater, after all these years of waiting, can finally get in.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that
you tell me, because we both go back to the Atwater days.
Yeah.
How meritorious is that?
Yeah, I mean, he meant so much to that defense, and he was like a linebacker, you know, and I think everybody has like a signature moment, and his was when he knocked Christian Okoye on his butt on Monday Night Football.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't his when Largent knocked him down? Was that?
No, that was Dennis Smith.
Wait, what are you talking about, Jim?
Largent and Atwater?
No, what he's talking about is that Smith took a cheap shot on Largent, and Largent came back and just knocked him down and almost unconscious. I mean,
yeah.
It's one of the great hits.
Yeah. Now, it wasn't Dennis Smith, though. It was another safe. I'll come up with it, John.
It was another Denver, but it wasn't Steve Atwater.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. And Dennis Smith, by the way, maybe the hardest hitter in the NFL at that time. He knocked himself unconscious on my right knee, unfortunately. Led to four or five surgeries for me. But anyway, yeah. John, no linebackers in there. What's the matter with you? You didn't put any linebackers.
Is it Mike Harden?
Mike Harden, thank you. It is
Mike Harden.
Mike Harden's the guy that, that Largent got.
Mike Harden. But, I think, Sam Mills is now fresh to the room. Zach Thomas is fresh to the room. I think being fresh to the room, when you have so many carryover guys that are now starting to build momentum, that I think that they have to stand in the waiting queue. Now, again, that's like they can make it. I know certainly there's going to be a lot of excitement down here and a lot of push in the room for Zach Taylor, Doc Thomas, because he's a Miami Dolphin.
Right.
But again, the uniform is not as important and the location is not as important as how the votes go. And that's why I say I can't guarantee this is going to be the case, because the votes go a certain way and you never know. And again, what happens is, votes go and you split things when you have extra guys at the positions. And that opens the door for somebody that you sometimes don't expect to get in, or somebody you don't expect to get into the final 10 to get into the final 10.
John, you had a lot of great interviews this week from Radio Row there in Miami, and I heard part of the interview you had with Ryan Leaf today. I really enjoyed that. Catch us up on how Ryan's doing.
Well, the first thing I started out with, and each year Ryan gets, he's so good. I mean, certainly there's nobody's added. I mean, maybe Dave Wyman adding so many commercials or something like that would equal this. But, with the, what Ryan Leaf has done, he's amazed at it. He says, hey, I'm 5 years out of jail. And it's like, I keep on adding jobs like this. He's doing ESPN commentary. He's a colleague of mine on Sirius XM and on Sirius Radio, not because he does college stuff. He has his own podcast, Believe podcast. He's got all these different things going on. But one of the things I think was so great, as I went to him, I said, the first thing we're going to talk about, you had the most insightful tweet I saw the entire 2019 year. And the tweet basically was, when Antonio Brown had his first meltdown in Oakland, Ryan, he says, hey, listen, I can tell you this. I don't know this for a fact, but Antonio Brown doesn't want to play football. And I say this from somebody like myself, because, he says he's narcissistic and he thinks that Antonio Brown's narcissistic. But he says, when you start doing things like that, because I know I did things like he did, that you don't want to play football. And so I thought it was one of the most insightful things. And so I asked him to expound on it and talk about it, which he did, because he says, listen, he says, I did some of the same things. maybe as bad, maybe not as bad, and all that. But you're doing things that cost you the chance to play football. And when you keep doing it, then what happens is that you're getting a pattern. And that's what he was saying. So I thought that was one of the most insightful things I had seen all year about any subject in sports. And so I applauded him on that.
John Clayton is with us live from Miami. John, I'm reading a story here about Baker Mayfield. Apparently he was on the ESPN set with Rex Ryan and sounds like a guy that may have learned a lesson. He said, it comes back to doing my job the best I can and not worrying about the outside stuff, not replying to you, talking about Ryan, just doing my job, doing what really matters, being a quarterback. And then he went on to say, basically, let's just be honest. I put my foot in my mouth a lot this past year. I'm going to internalize that. And then he went on to say, the focus needs to be about what I can do to help this team win, what I can do to make our franchise better, head in the right direction, do the things of why I was picked in the number one spot and make it happen. Do you think he's a changed man?
Well, I mean, certainly I think it's a great opinion. We'll see if he's a changed man, because again, it's nice to be able to say it, but it's also nice to be able to execute it. And, that's one of the reasons, like you can see, his footwork was off this year, particularly on certain throws. And of course, if you got his foot in his mouth, you can see where the footwork's not going to work out, because, you know, it's hard when you only have one foot on the ground and one foot in your mouth to be able to get the footwork right. Mm-hmm. But no, I think it's good words, but we'll see, because, you know, so much of his career, particularly in year two, was all words in execution. So I think it's the right thing to say, but can he follow that up and do it? He didn't do that this past year. I mean, he talked too much. And he didn't execute as well. So it's like, I think those are nice words. But again, is that going to hold up? That I don't know.
Hey, John, I don't know. I think it might have been after we talked to you yesterday. That picture that Tom Brady posted, I thought was really clever, because you look at it and he could either be walking in the stadium or out of the stadium. He's probably just messing with people. But have you heard anything further on him?
Well, there's a couple things in that. It's like, first off, when I saw that, it's like, okay, I can see the game that he's playing right now, because, you know, he's got, both Jimmy Garoppolo, who is his agent, is Jimmy Garoppolo's agent, Brady's agent. And so you can see there's something going there. You can see that Gronk is saying, listen, he wants to test free agency. But I think when you see that picture, okay, he is testing the New England Patriots two ways. First, he's saying, listen, I'm ready to walk out the door. What are you guys going to do? But it's not just the money, because, again, since he did his contract in 2010, where he was the highest-paid quarterback, and since 2013, he's been taking 70 cents on the dollar. So it's like, okay, fine, I'll do that if you keep helping the team. Well, last year, the money they saved didn't help the team, because they didn't give him any wide receivers other than Julian Edelman. You know, they didn't give him any tight ends whatsoever. I mean, you know, they traded their best tight end. That's Jacob Hollister to Seattle. So it's like, that didn't help. So it's like, okay, I'm walking out the door here. You either going to pay me, or if you're not going to pay me, are you going to show me you're going to get me players? Because if not, I'll walk. So it was an interesting story today that I was hearing. And then, you know, by the time I heard it, reaction came out of that, is that, Tom Brady, who's now living in New York with his wife, would then move to Miami and sign with the Dolphins, and then eventually become a minority owner of the Dolphins. Now, the reason he can do that, Stephen Ross is the biggest Michigan person investing as far as supporters, and Brady's from Michigan. Okay, so you can see there's a link there, but Stephen Ross came out with statements today saying, none of that is true. That's not going to happen. Now, we'll see if it happens or not, but I think you can see the two things that are going on right now. I think he's trying to push to see, what do the Patriots want to do? Do you want to pay me? Or if you want to not pay me and then not take care of the team, then I'm walking.
Well, let me ask you this. Two questions, John. First of all, is he walking in or out?
I guess they can do it two ways.
Based on your looking at him, you can only choose one, John.
I think he's walking out. I think he's leaving, because I think that you see the idea that Bill Belichick has taken the tack as like, he'll get rid of somebody before they're done, because he thinks they're on the decline. Okay, he did it with Chandler Jones and he was wrong. He did it with Akeem Hicks and he was wrong. He did it with Logan Ryan and he was wrong. But most of the other players, and of course, Tom's seen that through the years. Wait a second, you're letting all these good players go, and it's like, and I'm giving you the money to pay these guys, and you're letting them go. So I think he's sick of that. So yeah. I think that's one thing that plays to the equation. So I think he wants to see, it's like, okay, show me something that you want to do. Do you want to, you know, give the team better players because right now the team's on the decline, or do you want to pay me? Which way do you want to go? Because if not, then I'll go to a different team and then try to do something different. I mean, certainly, I mean, Tom Brady should never leave the Patriots. But again, they can allow it to happen. And I think they do want a more mobile quarterback, whether it's Marcus Mariota, whether it's going to be somebody like Andy Dalton. But I think there's a lot in the works right there. But I think Tom's now testing the Patriots as opposed to threatening them.
Yeah, so you said 70 cents on the dollar since what, 2013?
2013.
Yeah, how much?
2013.
Have you ever looked at a number? Like how many millions of dollars has he given the hometown discount? What is that total, you think?
Let's put it this way. I'll just go off the top of my head and say probably $40 million. And this is without me doing any research. And I say that, because Eli Manning, came into the league in 2004, and he set the record at $252 million. Peyton Manning was next. Now, he came in 1998, and he earned $248 million. Brady's below that. Now, again, I can't give you the accurate thing. I can probably dig it up and look at it on the internet. But unfortunately, I got my ear to my phone right now, so I can't do it. My guess is he's probably in that 2020 range. So I'd say, it's either $20 or $30 million less. But again, this is now from, 2000. So, that's, I think he's given him a lot of money.
Yep.
All right, John, let's finish up with this. From San Francisco's perspective and Kansas City's perspective, what are the two biggest keys for both teams?
And the key to Kansas City is just make sure if you're behind, don't panic like you have it in the last two games, and then just get the momentum going and then force the 49ers, because, again, they're cover one, cover three, and so now you start to pick apart the interior of particularly the short area, because it's like, okay, you take two shots early in the game on Richard Sherman with Tyreek Hill, see how he responds, and he'll respond reasonably well. But again, if that's the case, then you start working some of the short passes, and then particularly in zone, you try to have Travis Kelce in the zone. For the 49ers, you try to run the ball, take the lead, and then try to make sure that you can hold on to it with the pass rush, but also knowing that the Chiefs don't give up a lot of sacks. They only gave up 17 sacks this year. But if you can get some pressure, maybe you can slow down Patrick Mahomes. But I think the key certainly is to who's going to score the most points, which is obviously going to win the game. But if it gets into a scoring match, the higher the score, the better it is for Kansas City. That's why I say 34-31 KC.
John, good stuff as always. We appreciate it. Have fun this weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Okay, great. I'm happy it went through with Dana.
I appreciate your effort on that. Thanks so much.
Hey, you know what a friend I am. When I heard that, I reacted immediately.
You're my guy, John. You're my guy. Have fun out there, buddy.
Okay, thanks.
There you go. There's the Professor John Clayton with us every single day here with Bob, Dave, and more. Coming up, get your drinks and snacks. Settle in. Dave has got a Super Bowl story time for us. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
I brought you a special present.
What is it?
Open it up.
As I was limping over there to beat him,
if you grab the guy's face mask and twist his head, then, like I tried to do to Terry Obie that cut me into the mud, that is something that's different, and that's a penalty.
This music is so soothing, makes you want to just curl up with a blanket in front of the fire and listen to Dave Wyman tell you stories.
I think it gets the same reaction at a gym that smoking used to get out of me.
Which is?
The song Smoking by Boston.
Oh, that's nice of you to say,
it was
Dave.
For the Smoking Lock of the Week.
And it's coming back. Smoking Lock of the Week is coming back at 5:30.
5:30. Yeah,
isn't that
great?
A triumphant return.
Yeah,
for this week,
a return.
Anyway. For this week, anyway. But what do you got for us?
Yeah,
today,
I would make some, tell some Super Bowl stories here. Because I think I got cut off a little bit yesterday about the one where my wife and I went to the party. We went to a party. It was the Super Bowl with the Niners and the Chargers, and it was terrible. And we went to somebody's house who had no booze.
That's right.
It was awful. It was just awful.
Do I know whose house that was?
And I want to tell people that you don't necessarily have to have booze to have a good time, but that would be a lie.
There's no fun to be had without booze.
Yeah. And yes, you do know whose house that was.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Former quarterback.
Well, let's not, just not. Let's yeah. not. Let's
okay. Just a quarterback in the league. I'm not specifying.
Geez, you're worse than Jim, Bob.
No. I won't blow. That's as far as I go with that. Yeah. People can wonder. They're going to come out with 8,000 guesses now.
So that was one. The other one, I've told this story before. If you've heard this one, you know, shut up, okay? Don't text in 710-710. My agent, Marvin Demoff, got me a ticket to the Super Bowl. That would have been Super Bowl 22. I think it was the Giants and the Broncos. It was at the Rose Bowl, and he got me one ticket. So I go up, and I'm sitting, like, near the top row, and I'm in, like, on the 10-yard line, maybe, like the 5-yard line. This guy who's a player comes up, and he was an ex or a hurt player for the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
Used to have his name. I'll have to look that one up. But he comes up, and he goes, hey, you're sitting right next to my dad, and I have a really good seat here. I understand if you don't want to switch, but, you know, I would love to sit next to my dad. And, you know, I'm pretty naive, and I'm, getting ready to be a rookie, and I'm holding on to my ticket, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to pass, man. I'm going to pass. So he starts walking away, and I start thinking. I'm like, okay, I go down. I catch him. I go, hey, go sit with your dad. I'm probably going to get screwed on this deal. He's going to give me some counterfeit ticket or something. I end up going down sitting on the 50-yard line.
Really?
I was like 12 rows up on the 50-yard line, and I was with all these Giant fans. And it was probably 65 degrees, but it was sunny, so they all had their shirts off and everything. They're talking about how it's snowing back home, so... And, you know, I wanted the Broncos to win just because Elway was, you know, our quarterback at Stanford. But they got worked on that one. But probably the most memorable one was when I went down and signed autographs with two penthouse pets.
What?
During Super Bowl. Do you know this one, John? Or, I'm sorry, John. I'm thinking of Clayton. Do you know this one, Bob?
Yeah, Dave. I'm Bob. No, I have not heard this one.
Thinking of Clayton for some reason. Anyway, yeah, Max Strong.
Penthouse Pets.
Yes. So Max Strong had this deal, and he's like, hey, do you want to do this? And I'm like, well, why don't you want it? Because it paid like $5,000 or $6,000 or something like that. And he goes, I can't do this. I'm like, why not? He goes, Penthouse Pets, man. I mean, I've got my foundation and everything. So I go home and tell my wife about it, and she's like, oh, you're doing it. I'm like, all right, so you got to
love your wife.
You've got to come with me, okay? Yeah, it's because it's going to be uncomfortable. So, you know, I go down there. It was at some casino down south, and it was the one where it was the Giants-Patriots, and the Giants beat them, I think, the second time, not the Tyree catch. But
is it the Mario Manningham catch on the sideline?
Yeah,
that one? Yeah,
exactly. I saw hardly any of that game because they had a whole line of people that wanted autographs, and that line lasted the entire game. But
during the game, you're signing
during autographs. The game, I signed autographs and I was looking up, but they put me in front of the Penthouse Pets. What everybody on the line really wanted was their autograph.
Yeah, they right? just had to go through you.
They
to
had
get
to go
them.
Through me. So yeah, I ended up doing that the whole time. But you know, these two girls were very nice, you know, and fully clothed. And you know this.
Well,
about,
I'm glad you stipulated that.
And for you two guys, when growing up, you know, as young red-blooded American boys, you know that penthouse is a little bit more revealing,
a little racier.
Yeah, you didn't see fully clothed.
It left nothing to the imagination.
Correct.
So I'm sitting there and trying to be, you know, nice, maybe making a little bit of conversation.
Say, I enjoy your work. You do a good job.
Didn't say anything like that, Bob. But the guys would come up with the, hey, I've got your centerfold here, and just pull it out right in front of me, you know.
Oh, man.
And there it is right there. And they're like signing it. Eh, no problem. So,
wow.
So I saw hardly any of that game.
But you made a good chunk of change, and you had pleasant company. And your wife was on board. Which
yeah.
Makes exactly. it all a good
well,
day.
She made it. She made it happen because I was like, I don't want to do this, right? She's like, $5,000? Yeah, we're definitely doing that.
Yes, we are doing that. Get out there and
so
say
unlike
yes.
Max Strong, I don't really have any morals and just went ahead and did that.
For 3 hours, the line was that long.
Yeah, it's so weird how that happened. I think, you know.
Didn't they have a TV? Was it like here where we don't have a TV where you couldn't see the game?
No, or? It wasn't like in here where we don't have a television. Well, actually, we have televisions in here, but there's no sports on them, but. For some
there's
reason,
nothing on us.
I know, we're just looking at
one of them got taken
there.
Away. The big yeah. one behind us. I'm not sure what's happening with
but
that.
But they had these big, you know, big screen TVs everywhere, and you know, you you try to talk to people, and you know, people were coming up and asking some Seahawk questions and stuff like that. Most of the questions were for them, but it was something where I didn't see the entire game, and luckily I had it recorded, so I went home and watched it. But yeah, those stand out as some of the more memorable Super Bowl things. The worst one, obviously, was, and Bob, I remember you making a comment about this, Super Bowl 49. I sat out in the sun for like a 2.5 hour pregame show, mm-hmm. and I forgot to put like suntan lotion
on.
Oh,
you looked a little.
I got totally fried. So then we go in, and then, you know, that last play happens, and I'm trying to get down on the field with Max Strong, and there's this Patriot lady all dressed up in Patriot stuff, and she was jumping up and down in front of me,
mm-hmm.
and it took everything I could to not like shove her out of the way. But then I get down there and we're doing the show, and all the Patriot, you know, cameras, you know, their stations and everything are doing right, you know, their show right next to us. And of course they're very jubilant, and the players are like kind of infringing on our little space there.
Of course they were.
But I was standing there trying to describe it, and you said that everybody said I looked really mad.
A little bit.
And it was because my face was all red because I got sunburned.
Yeah. Looked like the heat miser.
Yeah. But it was terrible. And that whole experience, and then after that, and really for a whole year, if you remember, the ratings and everything for this station, it just took a huge plunge.
People
nobody
not,
wanted to talk about it.
No, they didn't want to hear about it.
Luke Wilson went in the basement of his parents' home, didn't he? And he was drinking, was it champagne?
Is that what he did?
That's what he said. And, you know, it's funny. I saw Luke right after that. And, you know, I was walking into the party because there's a party, you know, whether you win or lose. And so I was walking in there, and he was just like, he just had the stare. And he's like, dude, we had that game. We had it. You know, and I was like, man, I'm really sorry. I don't know what to say to you. But
what was the mood like in there? Was everybody like that?
It was like, who was it? Drake was up on stage. And I remember KJ Wright sitting there at a table with his head down the whole time. And then I ran into Ken Norton, and I introduced my son to him. And Ken could not have been nicer. And, you know, he was okay. I mean, he was definitely, you know, talkative and everything. But, I mean, it was just... It was so bizarre to
see. Was Pete and everybody there? Or?
I didn't see everybody like I did the year before, because that party was a blast.
Oh, I bet.
It ended up ending at like 4:30, and I think I had to get up at 6:30 to get on the plane to go home. So, but yeah, that was a great time. But just the total difference in that year. And I'd say the same thing about Super Bowl 40, where, you know, I was sitting in the stands for that game. It did not seem like the refs screwed the Seahawks that bad. Because they didn't have a great replay system
up
there.
Oh, until you watched the TV copy.
The TV copy, yeah. And same thing I would say, and a lot of people have said this about Chris Collinsworth, that he kind of screwed over Daryl Bevel by saying, that's the worst call in Super Bowl history. I don't know if everybody would have necessarily thought that, you know, at least not as strong with that opinion. And I know people texted, oh, yes, I would have. I said it right away. That's a stupid, you know, decision to throw, but... Yeah, it was just so weird being there. And then when you go watch it on TV, I think the Super Bowl, honestly, is a better product on TV.
Well, it's a perfect segue, Dave, because Deion Sanders does not hold back when talking about the worst play he's ever seen. We're going to let you hear that when we sweep the dial next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
What was that, fake punt or something like that? That turned the whole thing? That was it. That one play, he's going to live with that for the rest of his life. That was the second dumbest play I've ever seen in my life. The first one was from Seattle, not giving Marshawn the ball. That was the second one.
That's the voice of Deion Sanders talking about the Houston Texans fake punt that he says was the second dumbest play he's ever seen behind the Seahawks, not giving Marshawn the ball.
You know, I would say Deion Sanders is the second dumbest variety of football player. Corners. They don't even have to come in and get the huddle call. They just stay out there. And then they complain, and they cover the first dumbest people in the league, the receivers.
Deion's out there sharing opinions these days. He's not happy with how the Hall of Fame's doing their business. Thinks they just let in every Josh McGeggy off the street, and it's not so special anymore. And
yeah, who does he think he is, man? I've always loved Deion. Yeah, always have.
I love the guy too. He's a really nice guy. I did a show with him for a week at a Super Bowl.
Did you really?
Yeah, at a Super Bowl. Yeah, he was.
If you walked up to him now, do you think he would?
Yeah.
Remember you and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have his number?
I do.
Let's call him. You want to call him?
Yeah.
Let's call him after the show.
I'll give it tomorrow. I'll give it to Linda. Linda, you can try calling him.
I always
Dave Wyman has a bone to pick with you.
That's right. I always loved him, though. When everybody's like, oh, you probably didn't like those celebrations. No, I loved his celebrations.
His were original and cool.
Here's what they were. They were all inclusive. It was like, it's a big party for all of us.
Yeah.
A lot of those guys were like, look at me, and you know, pointing to the back of their jersey, and he was always like, hey, come on in. It's a party, man. I loved that about him. I dissed him there a little bit, but I really like him. I don't know. I understand people who don't understand defensive matchups and whatnot saying that they should have ran the ball there. But the thing that kind of bothers me is that he's in the Hall of Fame and now he doesn't want anybody else to get in. That's kind of weird. It's like he got his and now he's pulling the rope up.
Yeah, I think he was upset with Eli Manning making it in. And so he just wanted
to make
a statement about, well, he's going to be in. There's a lot of talk that he's going to be in. But, yeah, Deion, he was a hell of a baseball player, too.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Where he took a helicopter to the baseball game after a
football game, yeah.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. I had a firsthand look really quick. Dave Craig was trying to chase him. I like telling this story. Because I was down on the far end of the 30-yard line, and Dave got picked off by Deion at about the 10-yard line. So I was standing nearly on the sidelines, and he came running right towards me and up the sidelines, and he was taking his steps. First of all, I think about a quarter-sized amount of his foot was touching the ground.
He's just kind of gliding.
And he was like taking like 6 or 7 yard strides. It was like watching a deer. And by the time he got to me, he put the hand behind the helmet and was doing the thing. And then I turn around and look, and Dave Craig is the opposite. He is like his entire foot is touching the ground. And he's running like you know how when you were a little kid, like you wanted to show your mom and dad how hard you were running? You pump your arms. Yeah. And I'm like, Dave, give up.
You're going to pull something.
But Dave would not stop running, tearing up the ground. Until he went past the goal line, much to Dave's credit.
It's a humbling experience. It's a different ballgame. Let's just be honest. I put my foot in my mouth a lot this past year, and I'm going to internalize that, and I think that's the way I need to handle it. I mean, rest in peace, Kobe, but that's the way he did it.
Yeah.
He motivated himself. He didn't talk a lot. He talked to his teammates, drove them to be better people, better men, and so that's the way I need to handle it. I don't need to respond to the things that don't matter.
That is the voice of Baker Mayfield. We talked about that a bit with John Clayton. He was on the set, the ESPN set, with Rex Ryan, who he took a shot at earlier in the season. Apparently, they shook hands after the interview. And
all right, you guys going to start liking him now?
We'll see. I like his commercials.
Is he going to shut up?
Yeah, if he would shut his big yapper, yeah.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have a problem with him, and I enjoy the commercials every time I see him about the bath, the toilet not working, and hey, I got 68,000 people coming. It's the third, no, it's the fourth one.
You know what? It's interesting though. He's talking quite a lot about not talking. How about just stop talking?
Yeah, we'll see if he sticks to it. Once he takes some heat, if he has a bad game or somebody calls him out, one of the analysts, we'll see if he's able to stick to it.
Don't you find him at least interesting though? I mean, whether you like him or not. I think it's fun watching what's going on with the Browns. There's always something going on there in Cleveland.
Well,
they got 32-year-old general manager now.
I know. I just thought they were anointed so soon when they brought over Odell, and they've got Baker in his second year after a phenomenal first year. It wasn't that phenomenal. They were 7-8-1. You look at his numbers, you're like, all right.
It was pretty good the first year.
It was okay. It was okay. They were a losing team.
Did okay against the Seahawks, too, when they played back there.
Yeah, but, you know, everybody was talking the playoff bets on them, the odds about them, because they were going to be a playoff team, and everybody was betting on them, and look, they were a disaster this year.
I'm alive thanks to a cutting-edge program at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Their research has the potential to save millions of pets' lives.
Pets make a difference in your life. You can make a difference in theirs. Donate now at weathertech.com/donate.
That's ad David McNeil. He's the owner of WeatherTech Car Accessories. He spent $6 million on a Super Bowl ad. So apparently he took his dog Scout to the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine for cancer treatment, where they gave Scout just a 1% chance of survival. So he hopes the ad will create an even larger donation than McNeil would have given if he had just gave the money to the school.
Yeah, it's a cool ad. I posted it to my Facebook page. And, of course, I'm a sucker for golden retrievers, and Scout's a golden and a beautiful dog. And so, yeah, that's pretty cool what he's doing. I guess maybe some people are thinking, well, why'd you take this ad out? And you could have just donated the money to the university's medical school or vet med school. But I think everybody's going to enjoy the commercial. It's going to air during the second quarter of the Super Bowl.
WeatherTech, it's a good company. They got some good things. You know, yeah. Like the coffee slot holder, cell phone holder thing. And, yeah, that's
well,
cool.
Apparently they do pretty well for themselves if they have $6 million to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, to do that. And he's hoping that it'll spur more donation than that $6 million he spent on the ad. Hopefully it does. I mean, his heart's in the right place. I like it.
As a
fellow animal lover.
I'm sure if my wife sees the commercial, we'll be sending them.
You'll be part of the contribution.
Yeah, sure we will.
Are you gonna be pulling her away from the TV every time the commercial comes on? Honey, what's over here? There's something in the kitchen I need to show you.
Yeah.
Why do you keep taking me away? I like the commercials the best.
Where's the credit card?
Oh, we're donating. It'll be like the appearance. Oh, we're doing this.
Yeah, that's okay. Right.
There's no real discussion going on here. It's what's going to happen. So just buckle up, kid. All right, good stuff there. And people tell me to call Dion. I'll send him a text, see if he responds. I'm gonna guess he's right in the middle of everything in Miami right now, though.
Give it a shot, though.
Yeah, somebody's saying, well, hey, don't just talk about it. Be about it. I'm like, okay, so let's get him on. Who shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, Dion?
Yeah. Run down the list of those not deserving that honor. All right, coming up, Dave has been hard at work on his Sextravaganza project. He brings up part two, and we'll look at how the 49ers and Chiefs match up. All of that is coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.